Now let's expand our debate about myths to myths about the election Tuesday. I'm told the president will be chosen this year by a small percentage of still undecided voters. Who are these people? A Huffington Post column says they're idiots. And this is a common belief. If you do a Google search on the word undecided, Google now helpfully prompts you to search undecided voters are idiots. So are they? I suspect they are if they still haven't decided by now, but both my guests, who are smarter than I and who research this, say it's a myth that the undecided voters are dumb. Matt Welch is editor-in-chief of Reason magazine. Ira Stoll edits the blog Future of Capitalism. So, Ira, I understand you're undecided. You must be an idiot.
Well, I don't hold myself out as some kind of genius, but I went to Harvard. I follow this stuff for a living, and I don't like to make my decision until I step right into the polling booth. Wait, I mean, maybe I'm just a procrastinator.
Follow it for a living, so you pay attention. There must be, you have learned enough.
Learned enough to know that there are flaws with both of the candidates and that it's simpler than just voting for the one who's going to save us from all the trouble.
And Matt, there is actual research on this about who these people are, and they're not dumb?
Not at all, actually. The Associated Press came out with a poll in October, and it showed, and this is consistent findings to other polling organizations, it showed that undecided voters are more likely to vote, they are more likely to read campaign information, they're more likely to be informed and enthusiastic about the process, they're just undecided.
But the New York Times ran an op-ed about them and headlined it, Idiot's Delight.
Of course, because people who are totally invested in partisan politics, which the New York Times definitely is, tend to think that those who do not share their own proclivities must be somehow dishonest or just not smart.
All right, let's move on to another commonly held belief, and that's that the evil super PACs corrupt the election.
You've got these guys writing $10 million checks. You've got these super PACs that are just going crazy.
The headlines say it's a dangerous weapon, an evil.
Well, let's take the broad view here. These are people who are outside of politics trying to influence the way politics is done through this spending their money. What on earth is wrong with that as an idea?
Because they have too much power, the rich.
The people who have too much power are incumbent politicians who win consistently 85-90% of the time for re-election. One of the only ways to unseat incumbents is to have people willing to spend money to try to run advertisements against them. There are super PACs that are dedicated to bipartisan unseating of incumbents, to inject political competition. We wouldn't have had a long Republican primary at all if it wasn't for the existence of super PACs backing Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich, making it more competitive. We should all be invested in political competition. Super PACs are a way to have more and not less competition.
And there are plenty of ways for rich people to lose elections. I mean, we'd have President Perot, we'd have California Governor Meg Whitman if just having more money won the election.
And just to be clear about the money, the super PACs are spending more than $1 billion this year. But the campaigns are spending $5 billion, and Americans spend $7 billion on potato chips. Now let's move back to disaster myths. We, I'm told, need a federal warning system for disasters like Hurricane Sandy.
You know, I mean, think about the most radical and positive communications breakthrough in possibly history or certainly our lifetimes.
It's my show?
Besides your show, but it's the internet, which is by definition a bottom-up user kind of generated grassroots thing. Internet, and then also cell phones, where you can have a communications device that you carry with you everywhere. This allows people to access real-time information constantly. What did you do during the storm, John? You weren't waiting for Barack Obama to tell you what was going on. You were refreshing Twitter like a madman, probably, or the Drudge Report, or listening to the radio, or looking at the Weather Channel like everybody else. We are all accessing information. We don't need a top-down system to suddenly tell us what we already learned an hour and a half ago.
And actually, during the storm, like a day into it, all the young people in my house got a sudden emergency warning. A big storm is about to hit. It came a day late. And the history of this, it's never been used successfully. In 1971, it issued a false alarm, accidentally played the wrong tape. On September 11th, it was not activated. We heard about that from television and radio. It was tested in November of 2011. It worked on some, but not all, TV and radio stations. Some people heard Lady Gaga music on the system because of some mistake. It's government incompetence, but they spend hundreds of millions of dollars, and nobody is talking about we have to get rid of it.
Well, it's a classic government creep, right? Emergency response almost always works better at the local level. So if you can hear and know what the special sounds are for, you know, New York kind of disaster relief, then you're much better informed than you are by a president or some kind of federal system.
Thank you, Ira Stoll and Matt Welch.